The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but even if you accepted the existence of some kind of supreme being, there are all kinds of other lame things Christians believe in. What about Satan? What about demons? I mean, come on, it's fantasy time. It's hot stuff comics book time, or maybe fine for a scary movie such as The Exorcist or The Omen, but no rational person could take such nonsense seriously, could they? Well, my friend, I get where you're coming from, because that's just exactly what I used to say. And I would admit, originally, at square one, the belief in demons or some being named Satan does not sound like the activity of a rational mind. When I was growing up, I did not believe in the supernatural. I didn't even believe in any kind of God at all. I was an atheist. My parents were atheists. That changed. And my own mother was one of the first people to see how fast and how radically I had changed, because it changed before she ever believed in the supernatural. It was late at night. I'm going to set this up for you. I was a drama major, so I love to set things up for you. I'm in high school. I'm returning home from an evening with my friends. Never had my mother looked so startled, and never would she have expected such words to come out of my mouth. I said, "Mom, brace yourself. Are you sitting down? Okay, I know this is going to be hard for you to believe, but Jane is still alive. Honestly, she is. Her spirit exists, and I actually talked to her." All right, you're out there in radio land saying, "Who the heck is Jane?" Jane was my 21-year-old sister, and she had recently died in a car accident. I was a sophomore in high school when she died. I'm a senior now having this conversation with my mom. She died in a car accident, but something happened a couple of years before that accident. She was disowned by my dad. I won't get into the whys, but there was all kinds of trouble, and Jane was in juvenile hall for a while, and she and my dad never got along. He had kicked her out of the house finally. He kicked her out for good. She moved in with my uncle. We were living in San Jose. She moved in with my uncle in Southern California for a while, eventually got married, and when she was 21 years of age, she was in a car accident. She had been into drugs. Ironically, she had come clean, but a friend of hers was ODing. So she and some friends on an intervention mission hopped into a car. Some drunk ran a red light and killed my sister and several other people in the car. And now I was telling my mom that James Ghost was alive. Well, as I just told you, my mom and dad had raised me as an atheist. Kind of hard to not believe in God, but then suddenly start believing in ghosts. But not only had I grown up without God, I didn't believe in anything supernatural at all. In fact, I was a cocky, arrogant high school senior, and the only reason I even accidentally stumbled into this bizarre-sounding experience is because I was at a wild drama cast party. I was in a play called The Dark of the Moon. We were having a wild party in a two-story house. The parents weren't home. And you know what happens at parties when the parents aren't home. I heard that a few people were messing around with a Ouija board upstairs. And I went up there with a few wisecracking buddies only to laugh at these naive, gullible idiots who believed in fairy tales. When the evening was over, none of us were laughing anymore. The smiles and sinister grins turned into jaws dropping. We saw some things we couldn't explain. Now, if you've ever seen a Ouija board, and I'm not recommending you go out and deal with one, because by the time this program's over, the whole point's going to be to leave that stuff alone. Please, it's like picking up a snake by the tail. But on a Ouija board, they have letters, capital and small and a horseshoe. And there's this little window. I don't remember what the official name is for it, but it's on a little pivot, like a little ball bearing. And yes, supposedly you close your eyes and you ask these spirits questions. And supposedly the spirits guide your hands over the letters. And of course, when you first look at it, you say, well, of course, they're moving it themselves. But I noticed a couple of things. First, their eyes were closed. Second, the letters were very close to each other. I looked at that and I had to say, and I wasn't one of the ones doing it. I was just watching, but I had to say, would I have been able to move that thing so fast and with such pinpoint accuracy land right on top of a letter exactly, whether it's right bullseyed? It just, after a while, that was hard to explain. And through the Ouija board, and then later on, you know, the parents finally came home. We got kicked out. So we went to this place called Palmore Park, and we continued that. Then we got together a few nights later, and we actually had a seance. But through the Ouija board and during the seance, several spirits identified themselves, but one claimed to be my sister Jane. Now, my brother and I were both there, but never did we operate the Ouija board. Never did we come in contact with the person doing the seance. You know, at seances, supposedly spirits speak through people. My brother and I were sitting there, but this spirit suddenly started saying things about our family that were very private, that nobody outside our family could have possibly known. And the spirit saying this claimed to be the spirit of my sister Jane. And one thing that was very interesting is we asked the question, "Are you?" This was when we were doing it on the Ouija board at first. We said, "Are you the guardian angel of our family?" That shows the naive view. Of course, I'd never believed in any of the supernatural stuff, but you get into that, all of a sudden, all the stuff you've ever heard in your life, it converges together, and you think of guardian. So we said, "Are you a guardian angel?" And the Ouija board spelled out only mother's side of the family. Isn't that interesting? I found that intriguing. She was acknowledging the spirit, her bad relationship with my dad. The only thing is, as I said, my brother Paul and I were the only ones sitting there who knew about this falling out my sister had with our father. And Paul was not operating the Ouija board. Neither was I. Then, and another evening during a seance, one of the women that was with us got possessed. And she turned to my brother and spoke as Jane with tears coming down her eyes saying, "Paul, be good. Paul, be good." You need to know that was something Jane used to say to Paul all the time. All the time. This is because Paul was much like Jane in temperament. Jane was the oldest. I was the middle. Paul next. And like her, he would argue with my easily irritated dad and set off his temper like a geyser at Yellowstone Park. I never saw the point in doing that. But the point is, because Paul was a lot like Jane, and because Jane had gotten kicked out of the house, Jane was always worried that Paul would get kicked out of the house also. Well, as it happened, I was the one that got kicked out of the house next because I became a Christian. And Jewish parents don't like it when their kids become Christians. But I renounced that occultic activity because I learned when I became a Christian, I should say the occultic activity at first, my first response was because it was my first experience with the supernatural. I said, well, boy, if the supernatural exists, God might exist. But I knew nothing about God or whether he was even the God of the Bible. I didn't believe in the Bible. But I went home that night, got down on my hands and knees before I went to bed, and I prayed. And I said, now that I know you exist, I'll start praying to you every day. And I did for a couple of years. It was a couple of years later then when I was in my second year of college that I became a Christian. And at that time, when I became a Christian, I realized that even though this occultish activity convinced me that the supernatural exists, I needed to make a distinction between the evil and deceptive supernatural and the supernatural that comes from God. So I renounced this occult activity, and I'll tell you exactly why. Because, folks, interesting as that story sounds, I now know that I had not, in fact, talked to my sister Jane that night, but rather a demon, an evil spirit who was acting friendly and impersonating her in the hopes of getting me obsessed with the supernatural so that maybe we'd do more seances, more Ouija boards, get into other things. And such obsession could eventually lead me to demon possession, hypothetically. As it happened, my friends lost interest in doing that. And as I said, I became a Christian. And so I renounced all that. But like I said, ironically, seeing the supernatural, even the evil, deceptive supernatural, did convince me there must be some kind of God. And a couple of years later, this same God, by his grace and mercy, ended up giving me an experience with the spirit of the resurrected Jesus. And I was saved through the forgiveness of Jesus Christ. And I want to warn everybody, Satan has 1,000 masks, 1,000 exciting, warm, and fuzzy experiences. He wants to keep you from the true miraculous work of the real God in your life. And he knows that the best place to hide a tree is in the forest. So if you can have an experience with the real God, and you can, if there are supernatural miracles done through the real God, and there are, Satan goes, well, okay, you want miracles? I'll give you miracles, but they'll come from another source. It's kind of like when Moses went and talked to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh was shown a miracle. The staff turned into a snake. What happened? Pharaoh's magicians immediately did the same thing. Well, they were doing it through what was called the black arts. It was satanic activity. And then, of course, Moses' snake showed the superiority by eating the other snakes up. And if you don't believe that happened, you just watch the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston, and I'll show you. No, anyway, there's better reason than that. There's good historical evidence, actually, that it happened. Although that was a pretty cool movie, I must admit. Anyway, he wants to keep you from God. His path is the path of destruction. Any supernatural power apart from Jesus comes from Satan. It may look good and feel good, but the source is evil. Today, we dedicate our entire program to the education of your life. Joining me in the discussion, a woman who is herself an educator, but those who meet Dana Wright also get another kind of education when they first see her, an education on breathtaking beauty. Say hello to one dynamite lady, Dana Wright.
Well, hello. That's quite an introduction.
Hi, Dana. Again. How are you today?
I'm just fine. Thank you.
You know, Dana never knows how I'm going to introduce her. It's always fun to watch the look on her face. It's like, what's he going to say this time?
And now I know. You know, I have a
story.
Well,
that one wasn't so bad, was it?
No, that was okay.
That was somewhat
embarrassing, but it's okay.
Well, embarrassing because it's true and you're a humble person. And
okay, let's just move on. You know,
if we were on TV rather than radio, everybody would see that what I was saying was true. That's the disadvantage of radio.
It's a really good thing we're on the radio then. I do have a story like that as well, which is really interesting because it was about that same time period in my life. And I have a very different background, raised in a Christian family, was in our church youth group.
So you already believed in God, unlike
me. Absolutely. I was already a born-again believer.
Had you been warned as a Christian to stay away from things like
that? No, I hadn't, which is
very
interesting. Yeah, those things didn't come up in our youth group on what, you know, the do's and don'ts. There were other things that came up, but certainly not this. And I got kind of caught up in it without even really knowing what it was. And it was just a very spontaneous thing. There were a bunch of kids from my school getting together at a house across the street from one of my friend's houses. And I recognized a lot of the friends. And I thought, well, I got invited over. And
okay,
so I joined them.
So we want to see what you were invited over to. You'll hear Dana's story when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to KCBQ 1170, intelligent talk radio, as they say. But when you're talking about Satan, there's always the risk that somebody's going to think you're not intelligent. There has been documented verification for the things we're talking about, but sometimes it comes out of your personal experience. And I had shared a story of my first interaction with the Supernatural. Joining me and co-hosting with me today is Dana Wright, and she was about to start. Dana, you were talking about when you were in a youth group and there was a party developing.
I was in high school, and this was not a youth group party by any means.
I was just clarifying that. You attended a youth group at the time.
I did
weekly. But this is not on your high school.
Right, okay. And I went to church. I went to Sunday school. I was in youth groups. I had plenty of opportunity, I suppose, to have been warned, but I was not. I did not know.
That doesn't surprise me, actually. People sometimes grow up in the church and know very little about what the Bible warns, ironically. Yeah.
And this was a group of friends, many of them from my school, some of them older, many of them were the cheerleaders, the football players, and it was just kind of spontaneously developing across the street from a friend of mine, and we got invited over. I thought it was really cool because a lot of the popular kids were there, so I thought, sure, I'll go ahead and go. So they got out a Ouija board, and at that point, I just thought somebody was doing something that was causing what was going on. I still didn't really think there was anything supernatural going on, but I did watch that. I watched the markers move, and I saw it moving around on its own.
Like I was noticing that. How did it move so fast and their eyes are closed?
And it was flying around, and I thought,
if their eyes were open and they were moving it slowly, that would have been different.
I really didn't believe the one thing that was very eerie, though, was the room dropped in temperature. There was a considerable drop in temperature when they were playing with the Ouija board. And I still didn't think much about it. I really just thought somebody was doing something tricky that I wasn't noticing. Then they decided to do a seance. And they turned out the lights, lit a bunch of candles. And there were a lot of us in that room. And they were going to levitate one of our friends. And they got everybody in position. I was actually one of the people helping with the levitation. Now that I look back, I think, oh my gosh, I can't believe.
Helping in what way? What does that
mean? I was alongside the body. There were several of us lined up alongside of this person with just our two fingers out underneath the person. And we were just going
to... Okay, so I want people in the audience to understand. You don't mean that you were lifting him up and pretending he was levitating. You mean
Somebody in the party was coaching us on what to do. And
but it was the kind of thing where obviously your fingers couldn't be suspending.
Right. Yeah, oh, okay. No. The person clearly lifted away from us.
Was it a female person?
Okay. And I remember just going along with it. I remember them saying, okay, concentrate. I just vaguely remember the coaching that was going on. And I do remember somebody saying, somebody isn't thinking the right thing because it's not working. And I felt guilty instantly because I knew I wasn't one of the ones thinking the right thing. I just thought, oh, this is just a bunch of hooey. And I could not believe it. But shortly thereafter, this person did come up off the table, totally prone, nobody touching them. There was space underneath. The room dropped in temperature to like a freezer. And
What was the weather really like that day?
It was just a regular day in Bonita, California.
What season was it?
I don't remember, but it was not a cold day. I'm pretty sure it wasn't because we were coming in and out.
So you mean like a chill that you were just feeling inside?
The room went to the temperature of a freezer.
And it dropped very quickly,
instantly.
Very precipitously?
I felt just like I had been put into a freezer. And the other thing I was aware of was, again, the room's dark other than candles. I remember this white gauze blowing around, and it was just a regular living room in a house. It wasn't any big deal. And I just remember this white gauze kind of stuff just going around the room, and this freezing temperature freaked me out. Now I'm thinking, okay, wait a minute. I haven't been told anything about this. And I instantly, all I knew was this wasn't of God. That's all I could even make any kind of assessment out of. And I got up and I left the house. I remember standing in the front yard just thinking, okay, what do I do? What do I do? That was not okay. That was not of God. But I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what to call it. I didn't even know what to do. I wanted to go back in and tell everybody to stop it, but these are all the really popular people. So I'm thinking that is going to sound stupid. I just didn't know what to do. I was young. And all at that point, I thought, okay, I'm just going to go back to my friend's house across the street. And I left, went back across the street, and just waited for my friends back across the street, and just felt very uncomfortable the whole time, thinking, these people I know and care about are over in this house doing something that I am pretty sure is not okay now. And I just, I felt very...
So even without the education, you sensed that there was
stay away.
That, whereas in my case, I was very intrigued and there was the temptation to be drawn in.
My first real experience with supernatural, and it wasn't on the side of supernatural I wanted to be
on. Well, probably because you already were a Christian.
I was not. Clearly something was wrong
probably
to me.
Probably the real Holy Spirit of God was giving you a sense, whereas with me, the stakes were high. But the point is, we have both come to the conclusion that this was something that we should, I may have enjoyed it, you may not have enjoyed it, but we have both since come to the conclusion, with you already being a Christian and me becoming a Christian, that this is something people should stay away from.
Absolutely. And I did not know what to make of it until a few years later I was reading the book, This Present Darkness. And that's when I realized, oh my gosh, I think I was in the presence of
Okay, now that book came out many years ago, so maybe for people that aren't familiar, tell them a little bit about that
book. This Present Darkness by Frank Peretti came out when I was a young adult. It's probably 30 years old at this point. But it was the first time I had read from an author just what the manifestation might be of demons and what Satan can do. And in hindsight, I was realizing that time in that house playing with the Ouija board and holding that seance and levitating that person was, I realized what I could call it now, but it wasn't until several years later when I read this book. But it was, it brought up a lot of questions for him, but these still aren't questions that I think are talked about a lot. They are, you don't go and have sermons.
Well, and I
on
should
demons
say,
a lot.
You know, Satan does not like to be talked about. And
that's
sometimes
true.
When we don't feel like talking to him, there may even be a reason. Yeah. I mean, it could even be under his influence that we don't want to talk about.
Right. Well, I'm glad you're dedicating a show to it because it has been
We're not
area...
dedicating the show to Satan, but
no,
we're dedicating the
show to talk about. Yes,
about
yeah,
Satan.
Definitely.
And Satan, if you don't like it.
Yeah, no, I do think it's important because these things are very real and out in the world. And unless we talk about them, people don't know and they aren't warned. But I'm wondering if you can't go back and start at the beginning.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, we began getting into this, but we had just finished a different topic, and then of course I had a guest the next week, and last week was Easter, so we had to kind of leapfrog. But it's been so many weeks ago, I think our audience would be best served if we just,
go back to the beginning and start.
Yeah,
yeah.
Where
did Satan come? Where did this all originate from? Where did he come from?
Yeah, no, and there is this image, and I would suspect that that's part of the problem that have the reason Satan immediately sounds like a being that isn't real. Is when you say Satan or the devil, people think of some creature. He's red, he has a tail, he has horns, he has a pitchfork, and he's down in hell, he's shoveling coal. He's a creature of God who fell through pride. Now, often Christians say that he was an angel. I would say he was a being very much like an angel. He was definitely part of the heavenly host, but he was actually a being called a serpent. Now, when I say that, stop clutching your chest, everybody out there listening. When you say serpent, everybody immediately thinks of snake, okay? Because we have a creature today that's called a snake. Well, I'm going to tell you why I think the creature today is called a snake, but you need to understand that serpent literally meant, long a time ago, shining one. So we're talking about maybe not an angelic being, but a heavenly being. A being with a position of authority, a being who even had angels under his authority, with everybody being under God's authority, God being up on top. And we don't even know if Satan was his original name, but we'll talk about that when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel and Dana Wright. If you'd like to call in with questions about any of this stuff, our call-in toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. That's 1-888-344-1170. You can also send us questions through Facebook and Twitter or right over the internet. Questions at bobsiegel.net. That's questions at bobsiegel.net. But Dana has gathered a lot of the kinds of questions that you might have on your mind anyway. And Dana, you were asking me, who exactly
just
is
go
Satan?
Back and share with us. We just started talking about where did Satan come from?
This was it's kind of interesting because oftentimes when Christians are asked if they believe in life on other planets, a lot of Christians quickly say no. Now, I don't know if there are life on other planets, but there's a lot of galaxies out there. And I suppose God could have created life, intelligent life on other planets. But the Bible does teach that in an unseen dimension called heaven, and physicists are now theorizing that there are as many as 16 different dimensions. So the idea of another dimension that may have sounded like science fiction once, we're told that in another dimension there are already beings that are alien, at least alien in the sense that they're not of this world. They're not human beings, and these beings are called angels. And angels are beings that minister to God, are messengers of God. And yet there was another heavenly being, and he was called a serpent. And you just got to get the image of a snake out of your head, because whenever we see pictures of the Garden of Eden, we see this snake curled around the tree. That's not what the snake looked like. Serpent meant shining one. So this was this very intelligent, very beautiful person, probably looked a lot like a human being. And this being tempted Adam and Eve and tried to challenge them to sin. Now, when Adam and Eve turned from God, the first human beings living in paradise, all three of them were cursed at the same time, because what happened was they withdrew from God. They were withdrawing from God's protection by not obeying him. And God said, you know, man was living in paradise. Now work has become drudgerous and unfulfilling. And it's not that God was putting a whammy on them. It's just that he was saying, you don't want me in your lives anymore? Well, then I'm going to withdraw and let nature take its course. And as nature took its course, man's work became drudgerous and unfulfilling. Adam and Eve were created so that they would have lived forever, but they went from being immortal to mortal. Woman's curse was that she was now going to have pain in childbirth. Prior to that, God said, be fruitful and multiply. And if Eve ever had any children in the Garden of Eden, she would not have had pain at that time. There was also a prediction that men would domineer women and put them in subservienthood, which happened historically. The Bible comes out of a very chauvinistic culture, but the Bible is not a chauvinistic book. The Bible teaches that originally men and women were equal, but that Adam and Eve got cursed differently. But then the serpent, this being, this intelligent person who tempted Adam and Eve, also got cursed, and in the curse it said, on your belly you will go.
So that means I have the question then, because I think of the serpent as the snake belly crawling thing.
Yep.
What's happened?
Here's what I believe happened. Even though we read about the Genesis account in this book that we call the Bible, and it came to us from the Hebrew culture, if the Adam and Eve narrative is true, and I'm convinced it is, then the hand-me-down, the retelling of that story would have gotten into all cultures. For example, there's a seal that was found in Nineveh, a completely different culture than Israel, called the Adam and Eve cylinder seal, that shows a man and a woman standing next to a tree, and the woman's about to pluck fruit. And in their case, they do have this upright serpent whispering to the woman, but that shows that other cultures began handing this down. I believe that what happened was sometimes in the Bible they would speak somewhat poetically, like, on your belly you will go,
right,
you will eat
right.
the dust. So symbolically that meant that this person, Satan, who was in a position of authority in heaven, because he tempted Adam and Eve, that was his disobedience. So we're seeing,
so is that his fall as well?
Yes, yes.
Really?
We're seeing the fall of Adam.
Oh my goodness.
We're seeing the fall of Eve, and we're seeing the fall of Satan at one time. But because Satan's fall was described in a poetic fashion as him going on his belly and slithering along, I think then this gets handed down orally to other cultures, and somebody started naming the animals. Now, we know Adam named other animals in the garden. Well, there was also this animal that we call a snake. Someday after Adam and Eve got kicked out of the garden, eventually other people started naming the animals. And if there was this story that was handed down about a being called a serpent who slithered around, see, we think that because there's this creature called a snake, that the person in the Garden of Eden must have looked like the snake. What I'm doing is I'm suggesting that the reverse of that could be true, that because somebody one day saw some creature slithering on the ground, and he said, what shall we name this slithery thing? Oh, well, we're told that there was this being called the serpent who eventually fell and started slithering on the ground, so we'll call this a serpent. We'll name this creature after this this narrative, this story that's been handed down to us. So it's a whole different way to look at it.
Boy, no
so
kidding.
I'm not saying that that means Satan is a snake, not like these. Now, I don't like snakes. And if somebody wanted to call a snake evil, that would be just fine with me. But I believe somebody, every animal got named somehow. I believe that when the snake got named, it was named after Satan because there was already this oral tradition passing down the story. And when I say passing down the story, I don't mean that the story wasn't true. It was a true story, but it was being passed down. So that is how Satan fell. Now, the real Satan did not become a slithering snake. What his real fall meant was that he no longer was going to rule in heaven. But neither does he live in hell. Now, he's going to go to hell someday. God immediately condemned him and said, someday you're going to go to hell. But he didn't send him there immediately. And that's where it gets kind of interesting. So where does Satan live? Well, he can't go back and live in heaven. He was kicked out of heaven. He's not in hell yet. So what does that leave?
Earth.
He's here. There's a book
amongst
by,
us.
There's a book by a man named Hal Lindsey called Satan is Alive and Well and Living on Planet Earth. Now, I don't always agree with all the things Hal Lindsey says about prophecy and stuff, but in this particular case, it was a pretty interesting book about Satan. But more correctly put, on Earth, there's this unseen dimension, and he's in this other dimension. Now, Satan's not like God. God's omnipresent. God's everywhere. God reads your mind. God sees your thoughts. When the Bible says that Christians are tempted by Satan, they mean they're tempted by Satan's cronies. And that leads to the next part of our story, that Satan got other people to follow after him. One third of the angels in heaven made a decision to follow after Satan.
My.
And
wow.
They committed their own act of rebellion. And this took place in the days of Noah. These beings took on human form. They were male angels. I don't know if all angels are male. The Bible doesn't say, but these one third of the angels that followed after Satan were male angels. And they came and they had sexual relations with human women. Now, I understand that the minute you hear about some being from heaven coming down and having relations with women, it reminds you of Greek mythology.
It does.
But again, let's go back to what I said before. If all our cultures originally came out of one culture, then it makes sense that these stories would change over the years and that we'd have some bad, false versions of it. So what was originally angels became Zeus coming down. And so I know it may sound like Greek mythology, but let me tell you something. The Bible predates Greek mythology. The Bible's older than Greek mythology. So it's not that the Bible came from Greek mythology, it's that the Greek mythology is somewhat of a spiraling degradation from the Bible. Well, we'll talk more about that. Dana, we're barely scratching the surface. I'm already seeing that you and I need to come back next week and do another show, but we still have another half hour of The Bob Siegel Show. We'll be right back.
Do your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org.
When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that he is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. Educateforlife.org.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. We're having a discussion today about Satan, the origin of Satan, and we were right in the middle of Bob explaining to us how Satan even started, how he came to be. So if you can tell us what comes after that.
Well, Satan's transgression against God was coming down and tempting human beings. At that time, human beings fell into sin and Satan fell into sin. But Satan's not a creature with a horn and a pitchfork. He's not a snake. He was called the serpent, but serpent didn't mean what we think
of as a snake. He does have a lot of names.
Yeah, he does have a lot of names. And he tempted the human beings to sin. But then there was a big rebellion in heaven. And one third of the angels followed after Satan. And in their recklessness, they came down, took on human form, and had sexual relations with human women. Their children were kind of a half-breed, half-angel, half-human being that were called the Nephilim. Now, these Nephilim.
How come we don't know about that?
We do know about that, actually. That's mentioned very briefly in the book of Genesis. And then it's alluded to again in the books of 2 Peter, the books of Jude. Okay. But there's another book called the Book of Enoch. Now, the Book of Enoch is not actually in the Bible, and I'm not claiming it's inspired scripture or ought to be in the Bible. But the ancient Jews and even the early Christians and the apostles and even ancient historians like Josephus, they took books like that very seriously. So it's at least giving us more background and more history. Now, I know that some of you are doubting this because what we're talking about sounds very supernatural. It sounds like fantasy.
It does. It
sounds like science fiction. That's why Dana and I began with stories where we witnessed the supernatural ourselves. And I witnessed it as a non-Christian who was deceived. As a Christian since then, I have cast demons out of people. I have seen demons talk through people. And if that's not enough for you, it's been documented. There's a psychiatrist named M. Scott Peck. He was a secular psychiatrist. As a secular psychiatrist, he wrote a best-selling book called The Road Not Traveled. But then later on, he wrote another book called People of the Lie, where he documented people that were coming to see him, and he recognized that some of them were demon-possessed. He didn't even believe in demons. So even for those of you that want to say it's hallucination, it's autosuggestion, blah, 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 I think some of these psychologists and psychiatrists who understand autosuggestion more than you, we should listen to
Pretty
what they
credible.
Have to say.
So
I'm talking, I know how far-fetched this sounds, but these creatures, the Nephilim, were a marriage between disobedient angels and women at the time of Noah. So what did God do? God did a couple of things. The first thing he did was he took that one third of the angels that disobeyed him and locked them up in a spiritual prison that the Bible, sometimes we call it Hades, sometimes you could call it Tartaros. It's a prison, like a holding cell, just as somebody might go to jail and then await their trial, and then after the trial they go to prison. These angels are awaiting a trial, which the Bible calls Judgment Day. So these angels are not here on earth anymore. They're in this spiritual prison.
So they're not the demons.
They are not the demons.
Okay.
Some Christians think the demons are the fallen angels, and they're close. The demons are the descendants of fallen angels. But the fallen angels were evil. They were put in the prison. So that's the first thing God does is he locks up, spiritually bound, the angels. The next thing he does is he causes the flood. And he wipes out the whole
destroys.
Earth. And he destroys the Nephilim, the half breed angel human being. Now, I know some of you don't believe in the flood either, and you don't believe in Noah's Ark. Guess what? In several hundred different countries and cultures found on every single continent in the world, there's a flood story. And they found sea life, fossils of sea life, on top of mountains like, what's the highest mountain in the world? Top of the Himalayas, mountains like that. How did they get sea life up there? There was a flood. every culture's talked about a flood. Every continent's talked about flood. Perhaps not the continent of Antarctica. I don't think the penguins passed down a flood story, and I don't think we'd understand it if they did. But
they were on the ark.
There was a flood. There's nothing about the Noah's Ark story to not believe. But anyway, God sent a flood, destroyed the Nephilim. Okay, the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim are demons. The reason demons have such a fascination with human bodies and want to possess human beings is they once had bodies of their own, and they miss it. Now, someday God will judge these demons. So what's Satan trying to do? Well, what's happening is the demons now work for Satan. He's the commander. They're the army. So what's the purpose? Well, the original purpose was that Satan wanted to get as many people as he could to sin and then kill them. Now, he can only kill them if God allows it, because God's sovereign, and ultimately if God doesn't allow it, it can't happen. But Satan wants to destroy people, and I believe that by doing so, he's giving himself company. He knows he's been condemned to hell, and some people have said, well, then he's thinking, if I'm going to be condemned, let's take everybody with me. Yeah, I'll take everybody with me, and maybe if God has to send everybody, he won't send anybody, and then maybe he won't send me. That's one guess, and we're just guessing. But it could also be that it's just evil and spite, which is my opinion. He's in the ninth inning of the ball game. He knows he's lost, but he's going to play the best game that he possibly can. So originally his purpose was to encourage people to sin. Now, he can't make people sin. We have our own free will. But demons can put thoughts in our minds through some kind of telepathy coming from their other dimension. It's like a backdoor to the mind. And so think about that, Dana. If human beings sin and then die, then obviously they are going to end up where Satan ends up, and that's hell. Jesus threw a kink in the works when he came down and died on the cross. Jesus was God himself incarnate, taking on the form of a man. He died on the cross and paid the penalty for our sins, and 3 days later he rose from the dead. Jesus conquered sin and death. What were the two things Satan was giving people? Sin, or encouragement to sin.
Which would then result in death.
And death. But Jesus has now, because of Jesus, we're forgiven of our sin. Because of the resurrection, we can overcome death and live life. So in a sense, by Jesus going to the cross and rising from the dead, it made Satan a defeated foe. Therefore, Satan's objectives have changed. Whereas originally, the objective was to get us to sin and then kill us. Now the objective is keep people from giving their lives to Jesus Christ. Because if we can keep them from doing that, human beings tend to sin all on their own, and sooner or later we die, if not in a car accident, through some disease, or from old age.
Yeah, and then when we do become Christians, he's not real happy with that either. He works really hard on us. Well, can you go back and give us some different names that are used? Like, I know some ones like Satan. I don't know if that has a particular... Do all these have meanings, or are they just a variety of different names?
Yes, there are different names for Satan. Satan's one of the obvious ones, but there are different names, and they mean the same person each time. And we'll go through those names when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with Dana Wright.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
This is the Bob Siegel Show, and we're discussing Satan and just the origin of where he came from. And I'm thinking, Bob, if we can just cover a couple more things for sure before the end of the show, like if you could just clarify some names Satan has, I'll go through that with you quickly, and then we could talk about what he's capable of. Those would be really important things to cover before we close today. So, like, the name Satan.
So the name Satan actually means adversary, enemy of God, and enemy of any of God's people or God's angels, enemy of anybody that follows God.
Okay. Devil?
Devil means accuser, the accuser.
Hmm.
And so Satan goes before God and accuses us of having sinned. He is like the prosecuting attorney.
Yeah.
Jesus is like the defense attorney who stands up and says, Your Honor, my father, Dana Wright gave her life to me on such and such a day. So no matter what sin she's committed, she is forgiven. And then God the Father, the judge, says case dismissed. Devil, accuser.
Wow. Beelzebub?
Okay. And then there was a time where he was called Beelzebub, the prince of demons, just referring to the fact that he's in charge of these demonic creatures. And then there were two other names that Jesus gave him, but they were like subtitles. He called Satan the father of lies. He says when he lies, he speaks his native language. And interestingly enough, he called him the God of this world. Now, we need to clarify the word God there in Greek, theos. It could translate as deity. It could also translate as judge or magistrate. Some people think that there's a good God and an evil God, and Satan's like the opposite of God, and he's the evil. That's not true. Satan was a created being. He was created good, and like we spent some time explaining, he was put in a position of authority. He was created good, but he, with his free will, chose to sin, and he became evil. So he's still a created being, but he was put in charge of this world because God created the world and then gave it to the first human beings, Adam and Eve, our ancestors. They blew it. They threw it away. That opened up the window for Satan and demons to come and kind of, in a sense, they are in charge of this world.
Temporarily.
There was also, I should also say, there was not only a spiritual curse put on the world, there was some kind of biological curse. Have you ever noticed that, and anybody would notice this, even an atheist, the world is a wonderful place and a terrible place at the same time. We can see a sunset, a seashore, a snow-capped mountain, but we have hurricanes, earthquakes, we have diseases,
both extremes, yeah.
We have tidal waves. So the earth is a wonderful place, and it's a horrible place, and human beings are wonderful, yet horrible. Look at what human beings can do in terms of what they can build. The Bible says we're made in the image of God. Not that God has fingers and toes, but like God, we think, we feel, we create. I'm a kind of person that likes to create by writing, but other people build computer systems or design buildings. There's the procreation between a man and a wife. There's poetry. There's the love between men and women. There's the love parents have for their children. There's the camaraderie of friends. Human beings are wonderful, and yet ever since the beginning of human history, we've had murder and rape and racism and wars. So the world looks like a paradise invaded. The human being and its soul and psyche looks like a beautiful creature invaded. Genesis explains this. It explains that God created the world. Human beings were not responsible with it. They disobeyed God. They threw it away. And so the God of this world is now Satan. It's not, God is still the God of the universe, but the world was turned over to him. When Jesus was here, Satan came and tempted him. It's very interesting. It says that Satan showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a single glance, and he said to Jesus, all these have been given to me. Jesus never argued the point with him. Of course, Satan said, bow down and worship me, and Jesus said, that I will not do. But so sometimes people say to me, Dana, if the God of this world is loving, how come there's so much evil in the world? I've got a really good answer. The God of this world is not loving.
Right.
But if you want a loving God, there's another God out there who, through Jesus Christ, reinvaded this world, paid the penalty for sin, rose from the dead, and is someday going to return, recreate human beings, recreate the world, and restore paradise. And the Garden of Eden paradise that Adam and Eve once lived in, we will return to that. That's why the terms heaven and paradise are often used interchangeably.
That'll be glorious. So for now, the God of the world is Satan, and it is not going well.
But if we give our lives to Jesus, we can be delivered from that. And
absolutely.
We're like, and in a sense, we're like, it's kind of like if you're in another country, if you were in Russia and you were having some problems or getting persecuted, if you could make it to the American embassy, even though geographically you're not in America, Once you walk through the embassy, you're technically in American territory. The church is supposed to be heaven's embassy here on earth. Now, a lot of churches don't act that way, but ideally, when we walk into the church, we're supposed to sense the Spirit of God, be with brothers and sisters who've been forgiven of their sins, and we will resurrect someday. But in the meantime, we get a taste of heaven, even now in the midst of all this guck and evil surrounding us.
So what can Satan really do? What are his capabilities? How can he influence and get into our lives?
They're vast. According to the book of Job, supernatural catastrophes and diseases can come from Satan. And I'm not saying that every time that happens, it came from him. But
he has the ability to cause it.
Again, we were made in the image of God. He was probably to some degree made in the image of God, too. He has something. He can influence our thoughts. A lot of times, you know, sometimes people ask a lot about demon possession. The word demon possession is not actually found in Scripture. The term is demonized. It's like a back door to our mind. Demons like to deceive us so they can place thoughts in our mind. And again, this would be through some type of telepathy from creatures that are invisible to us because they live in another dimension.
So I've asked you this before. Can demons, can Satan read our minds?
To some degree, I believe they can, because if they're going to put thoughts in our minds, if there would have to be a context. The idea is they want to slide those thoughts in, and they want us to think that they're our thoughts.
Attach. Okay.
Like if a person sins against God, Satan wants them to feel like scum of the earth. Jesus wants them to feel like they're forgiven.
Okay.
And then they can manipulate circumstances as well. I had a friend one time, his sister was not a Christian, and there was this famous evangelist coming into town named Richard Hoag. He's not so well known anymore, but this was back in the 70s. His sister used to argue. My friend John, his sister, argued all the time, and he finally convinced her sister to go to this evangelism meeting, and this was a very persuasive speaker, and John was so excited. He told me that the minute they started walking out the door, as they were walking out the driveway, her boyfriend, who'd broken up with her 2 weeks ago, suddenly drives up at that moment, rolls down the window, and says, "I'm sorry, baby. It was all my fault. Can I take you out on the town?" Mm. And so she never went to the meeting. Now, is there anything wrong with having a boyfriend? Is there anything wrong with going on dates? Of course not. The timing is what was fishy. That's what I mean when I say Satan can manipulate circumstances. And then again, what do we mean when we say possession? Again, that word is not in the Scripture, but the word is demonized. When a person is so much, all of us to some degree get influenced by demons. And I should say, Satan's not omnipresent. So when we say Satan puts a thought in somebody's mind, we really mean one of his demons puts a thought in. Just as we have guardian angels, we also have a couple of demons that are trying to fight those for our soul. And they can put thoughts in our minds, and they'll try to tempt us to sin, but we have our own free will. When we already have the spark, the demons fan the flame, but sometimes a person gets so obsessed with a sin that they do begin to see their free will eradicate. And at that point, there is such a thing, and we read about it many times in the Scripture. Jesus did it, and the apostles did it. It's good to bring in a third party, and this demon that's got that kind of a fix on the mind to the point where they're actually, you know, if you can control the mind, if a demon controls the mind and the mind controls the body, then the demon controls
control
the body.
That being.
So the demon would actually be cast out.
But you're saying that the terminology demon possessed does not come from the Bible, but we hear about Christ casting out demons.
Well, the Bible did say the demon was in them, but we don't know exactly what that means. I'm inclined to think that it means they've somehow gotten into our mind. But remember, demons are disembodied spirits of these evil people that lived long ago. So they're very obsessed with our bodies. They do want to have a body again. But sometimes more than one of them can be hanging around in one mind. So they're obviously not completely inhabiting the body as we would think.
Okay.
Well, Dana, we got through some of this, but this is not something we want to rush with. I think at least for maybe the first half of next week's show, we should probably come back and
Well, there are some things like a little more on the demon possession and generational curses. It's really like, how does that play into things too? So maybe we could talk about that.
Other ways Satan accomplishes his objectives, blindness, fear, temptation. I've certainly got more stories I could tell about things that that I've seen Satan try to mess with people's lives. But if you're out there listening, we hope we didn't scare you. If you thought it was all science fiction, you're laughing and you're not scared. But I'm telling you, this stuff is real. For those of you that are listening and getting convinced it's real, We want you to understand who Satan is so that you can avoid him, not so that you can be afraid of him. If you give your life to Jesus Christ,
you don't have
the Spirit
to fear
of Jesus comes in you, and the Bible says greater is he that is in you, meaning Jesus, than he that is in the world, meaning Satan.
That's right.
Well, I and the effervescent, always pleasant, Dana Wright will be back next week. See you then.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.